You're listening to a download from theoutdoorstation.co.uk. Number 498.
Hello and welcome back to The Outdoor Station and part two of The Cairngorms Strikes Back, where the original Three Men in the Cairngorms return some 9 years after the first podcast series to revisit the area and take in the magnificence of the Cairngorms. Sadly, Storm Lorenzo had completely different ideas. And what I initially intended to be a great opportunity to discuss topics with my walking partners Lee and Tony related to the outdoors, recycled gear, secondhand gear, and gear lifespan in general was washed away, sadly, by the weather. Incidentally, all the secondhand and recycled gear I used can be found over on the show notes on theoutdoorstation.co.uk. And you might be surprised by the final weight. In part one, the storm ripped the end guy point out of my power lizard shelter, rendering it useless. And it pulled apart the zip on Lee's scarp. However, he had a simple sewing kit with him in an old 35mm plastic film container, and between us we fixed the tents. Will they hold for the duration of the trip, I wonder? We pick the story up after the second wet and windy night, camped out on the promontory between the burn and the river, opposite the bothy at Ben Elder Cottage.
Just coming up to 8 o'clock now on Tuesday morning, and unfortunately it's been another night of horrendous rain. During the night the squalls were just incredible. It was like being hit by a shot blasting gun or hail, the amount of noise and wind on the tent and rain, phenomenal. After repairing the tent last night and stitching the end pressure point back, I decided to pitch it slightly diagonally to the weather. Of course, it meant putting the pressure on the longest length of material. Ooh, water's ready. Which pushed the outer against the inner, which then created soak through, which permeated through the inner tent. So that as it got worse during the night, I ended up with a little shower on my face every time the wind blew because the water would come through. Looking forward to this cup of coffee. Oh yeah, I'm trying these new Taylor's coffee bags. Recommended. Recommended. They make a nice cup of coffee. Easy to dispose of. Fantastic. What was I saying? Anyway, yeah, so we've got soaked through. In addition to that, thankfully, I hadn't unpacked everything. Everything was still in there, roll-top bags or whatever it may be. So, therefore, although it was wet, and no matter where you moved inside the tent, anybody would know once the inner's wet, any movement you make is wet. Delicate nature of dealing with boiling water when you're lying on one elbow. Anyway, the long and the short of it was I got up, got dressed into my outdoor gear because it saves all my clothes getting wet, and carefully packed sleeping stuff away, and now I'm unpacking my breakfast. So many things going on. those instant porridges. I opened the packet, added a spoonful of milk powder, added a dash of sugar, added some broken up dried fruit from the dehydrator, and then sealed it back up again. So now for breakfast, I just emptied the whole lot into the water and pop it all inside the pot cozy, and then hopefully in 3 or 4 minutes time, when I finish my coffee, I will have a big bowl of fruity, milky porridge. I tried it at home, worked a treat, so let's see how it is when you're lying inside a wet tent on an elbow, talking to yourself, trying to cheer yourself up.
It's 8:30, and as you can hear, it's raining again. I'm currently lying here. I packed everything up pretty well into their various roll-top bags, waterproof bags, and I've just had a large porridge breakfast, which has warmed me nicely. So I'm lying on my Neo Air inside the homemade bivy bag, fully dressed, with my waterproofs on. Inside the homemade bivy bag with my down... No, they're not down, are they? They're prism, I think. Their prism boot is Montane, which is Primaloft. Primaloft boot is on, which is the only way I can keep my feet sort of semi-warm at the moment, because obviously when I get up eventually, I'll be putting my feet back into wet socks and wet shoes. That's the worst part of the wet shoe business. Once you get moving, it's fine, but actually just the moment you get fully dressed, it's a wake-up call. Let's put it that way. But everything is all packed away in its various bags beside me, and I'm just waiting for the guys to give me a shout as regards whether we're staying for a bit longer, which would make sense if the weather improves slightly, just so we could air the tents out a bit more and dry things off, or we pack up and get going at some stage. As I say, it's what, 8:30 now, we've got plenty of time, so I might just sit here and read my Kindle for a bit, I think, and hopefully wait for the weather to improve. O'clock, and as you can tell, nothing has changed. In between these squalls, I managed to gather from the guys that we'll stay here for another night and then make a move tomorrow morning, no matter what. But being stuck in a tent for 24 hours in this sort of weather means passing the time by eating, drinking and reading Kindles. Of course, each one's got its problems. The drinking, as nice as it is to have a hot drink or a cup of soup or something, means that you want to get out for a pee. Eating, just everything sort of loses its taste and there's no thrill. And obviously there's the natural thing of wanting to dig a hole at some stage during the day and trying to calculate when that might be between rain showers. And the reading is okay. It's good to have the Kindle. If I didn't have it, it would be driving me nuts. However, lying down reading a Kindle is okay, but for long periods of time I find that really hard work. In fact, I've noticed significant, really, in this weather, the difference between this and the teepee tents, the Hex Peaks, the 4 and the 6s, is the ability to sit up and just change your muscles in your back. Just a long time stuck in a shelter like this is really hard work. And it makes me think of Jenny Wordsworth. A few podcasts back, I did the interview with her regarding her race for the Antarctic and how she was stuck in her tent for several days. It must have been mind-numbing. Really, really frustrating to be stuck in conditions like that you just can't get out in. Just to do the basic physical things you need to do, I guess. Anyway,
I shall inspire myself to open the Kindle up again and continue with my book. I shall get it finished later on this afternoon and I'll start the next one. Four o'clock, and yes, you guessed it, it's still raining. There's just been a lull for about 5 or 10 minutes. So I stuck my head outside and had a quick wander to find Tony is moving his scarp as the water is probably about a foot away from his shelter. Lee seems to be slightly better placed, so he's staying where he is. And I've just checked around my tent and there is water sort of approaching. Basically, it's lying in the ground. It's got nowhere to go. There's been so much of it, so it's sort of starting to pool in different areas. So I think tonight what I'll do is I'll pretty well pack the rucksack with everything I can, just in case we have to make a very rapid escape and end up in the bothy, I guess. But having said that, there's so much water around, I'm not too sure we can actually cross the burn safely to get back to the bothy, which is about a couple hundred yards away. So whatever happens, if we do have to evacuate, it's going to be a very wet experience. Well, I think that's the longest period we've had in the last 24 hours when it hasn't been raining, and it's just fractionally starting to spit a bit now. It's 20 to 7. And the last hour probably has been rain-free, which was remarkable. It seemed just to be stopping for 5 minutes at the most before the next squall came in. And we're really hoping that the clearer skies are in a good indication that things are looking better for the next, well, 24 hours at least. Although the wind is still blustery and gusting, and there are a good amount of grey clouds coming towards us. They don't seem as dense and well laden with moisture as the last 24 hours. So I think today has been a first for me. I don't think I've ever spent 24 hours holed up in a tent on my own. And go back to times when my children were very small and we went camping, and that was a real struggle trying to keep them entertained for a day. But a whole 24 hours I don't think I've ever done before. It's always been camp, move, camp, etc. And it's been hard going. When was the last time you spent 24 hours in a tent? Especially when you're sort of trapped in the tent due to the weather as well. It's quite a challenge, isn't it? Trying not to eat all my food out of boredom, trying not to drink all my drink out of boredom, trying just to pace myself, have a doze, have a drink, keep the hydration up, read a bit of Kindle. I'm thankful for the Kindle, really thankful for the Kindle. I had a few fractured conversations with Tony and Lee, but they're both in the same situation, and even though we're probably no more than 20 metres apart, we can hardly hear each other over this wind. So that in itself has made to emphasise the loneliness, really. But I've just done a whole pile of housekeeping in the tent because I feel I need to be ready to pack and go very quickly if the weather should get worse again. My biggest concern at the moment, really, as you can probably hear from the volume of the river next to us, the amount of water which is now hurtling down off the hills is phenomenal. The slight footpath that we took from the bothy to here is now completely underwater. The little burn that we crossed quite easily, just skipping from stone to stone, it was 6 inches deep, is now more like knee deep. And the burns behind the body itself, it's just a wall of white water coming out of every orifice of the hillside. Now tomorrow, I know we're going down to Loch Ossian, which basically means retracing our steps back up the hillside behind the body I just mentioned, back to a re-entrant, another valley as it were, where we have to cross a river before picking up the track, if it's an established Land Rover track on the other side. And that's where my first apprehension is, because if this water is anything to go by, that river that we would have normally
waded across quite happily because we're all wearing approach shoes. I'm wearing my old Innovates and the guys are wearing hookers or hockers. Hockers, I think, is the name, not hookers. That would be a good trick. Anyway, that's my first concern. And I think really that will give us an indication of what the rest of the journey is going to be like. Because after Loch Ossian, there are another couple of crossings which I'm very nervous about to get us towards Glen Nevis. But there's no point jumping the gun. Things can change quite rapidly, as we've already experienced in this trip so far. And we can only hope that the water disperses as quickly as it came, if we're lucky enough to have a good day tomorrow with less rain and better weather. I've just conjured up a wonderful meal. I must recommend it to people. It was absolutely fantastic. I was scrapping around my bag for... I did actually bring a spare meal on top of the five that I thought we needed. And I found some pasta, which was dehydrated pasta. Pasta we'd already cooked and dehydrated. But you could do this with normal pasta. A cup of soup, a Bovril cube, and a pack of John West. John West do these flat packs of herb tuna. Anyway, so I put it all dry in the pot, filled it with water enough to sort of cover it and allow the pasta some liquid to reconstitute. Got it to a nice steady simmer, popped it in the pot cozy for 15 minutes. What a meal! A meal fit for kings. Really tasty, really filling, and that's fired up my internal engines for the next few hours and got me nice and toasty in here. Finally, the comment I made this morning, and for most of the day really, about the tent being absolutely saturated on the inner inside. There's really only one area now which is still wet, which is where the outer is blowing against the inner, and it's understandable. But in all fairness, water hasn't come pouring through. It was just the fact that anywhere you touched on the inner was sopping wet. So I was perpetually having a wet hair or wet elbow or wet hand or something. And thankfully all the items are still in bags, so it didn't really matter that much. But my big fear at one stage was it was going to really leak through and fill the ground sheet like a small puddle, or with a big puddle rather. Anyway, an entertaining day of a completely different sort. The guys have already got their heads down. I'm about to do the same. I shall sit and read a few more pages of my book. And then hopefully, fingers crossed, and touch whatever wood I can find in here, tomorrow will be a better day. So on that note, good night. When you sign up for the Outdoor Station newsletter, you have the option to give us feedback on our shows. You also have the opportunity to suggest people of interest you would like to hear more about. You can also suggest UK campsites which you feel may be unique, and cottage manufacturers who would appreciate a little exposure to a wider audience.
The Outdoor Station. Sharing the passion, appreciation and understanding for the outdoors world.
So it's 5 o'clock, and as you can guess, woken once again to this. Seriously worried about these river crossings now. Been on and off all night long. Not as heavy as the previous night, but certainly plenty of it. Don't have much choice. We've really got to start heading towards Fort Augustus and getting out of here. Quarter past eight, and breakfast has now been completed. I have to say, I thoroughly recommend those Taylor's coffee bags. Doesn't it make life easier? And it's nice to start the day with a nice cup of coffee. And then I followed that up with an instant porridge. And before I came away, I opened the porridge packet, added a spoonful of powdered milk, dash of sugar and some dried fruit. And that reconstitutes nicely in the pot cosy to make a lovely porridge to kick the day off and get the engine started and obviously cheer you up, because that's what we need, really. Weather outside today, still grey and overcast, still flurries of rain. Doesn't seem as heavy as it has been the last 24, 48 hours. And looking at the river next to me, the turbulence has dropped as well, so the amount of water coming off the hills is considerably less. However, it does give us the dilemma of the river crossings that we'd have to attempt to go via Ossian towards Glen Nevis. There's a couple of big rivers, and we are all considering alternatives. The guys are suggesting going another route towards Rannoch, and perhaps getting a bus or whatever to Fort William from there, and trying to pitch up at Fort William or find somewhere around Fort William. I don't know what the full story is, I haven't quite got the gist of it yet, but I'm sure it will become clear. So everything is pretty well as it was last night, all still wrapped in its waterproof bags, ready for a quick packing up and exit. I think they said they want to make a move by 9, so I'm just making sure I've got myself all ready, and really it'll take me 5 minutes to pack and take the tent down. Ideally, if we can do it during a dry spell, it'd be nice to wipe off as much water from the tent fly as possible, if nothing else, just to reduce the amount of weight one will be carrying, and it'll soon dry out when I pitch it next time. The other repair job I did was the webbing strap that goes underneath the tent that prevents the pole hoop becoming too wide a shaped C. So the arch, as it were, the feet of the arch don't spread out too far. And I realised that I need to check that, because if it was going up in a wind, when you're actually putting the pole in place, it would just overextend. So I managed to fix that with a bit of spare guy cord. So that's sorted, so it's ready to pitch again. The stitching repair job seems to have worked a treat and seems nice and strong, and nothing's popped, so that's encouraging as well. So all in all, I've got a warm belly, I'm warm and dry, all my gear's sorted, it's all ready to be packed up and go away. It's stopped raining, things are considerably better than they were yesterday. I'll fill you in once I know what the heck is going on, and as we head towards our final destination of Fort William.
Apparently it's 12:30, we've just stopped for a bar. We left this morning about 9 o'clock. Headed back towards the Belak, and then cut down to the river crossing, which is the one I was a bit apprehensive about. And we're walking by the river now. And to be fair, it wasn't a bad crossing. I should imagine it would have been a nightmare the previous day. I'm just navigating a steep bank. The sheer drop down to the river. Anyway, we bit of hesitation, but we crossed the river. Wasn't any more than knee deep, obviously very cold. And then we've been walking down the side for the last hour or so, trying to raise some enthusiasm. As you can hear, the weather is still windy and bursts of rain. Odd occasional burst of sunshine, which is very pleasant, but as soon as you take the hood off, it starts raining again. But it's nowhere near as bad as it was the other night, or the other 24 hours. And the wind is just a cold wind, as opposed to a blowing a hooli. I had an accident about half an hour ago, and I seriously thought I'd either dislocated or broken my leg. It's taken the wind out of my sails a bit. I was following Lee along the waterlogged, boggy peat track, and you pick your footing very carefully. And as I strode across another stream, what I thought was a solid piece took me right down to my right knee, in fact a little bit deeper, and my left leg was in the process of climbing the next step, and it just bent sideways completely and made me jump, to say the least. So, a few moments to catch my breath, stand up and put pressure on it, realised I was very lucky. But these little slips and accidents, so easy on these sort of paths. Walking poles are an absolute must to test the ground, catch you when you stagger, lean on when you're exhausted, but generally give you four-wheel drive. So, I mentioned I was using my old Innovates, which of course are non-waterproof, which helps greatly when you're going straight across rivers and walking down these boggy paths. I'm going to treat my feet tonight once I get settled in, wash out my footbeds and put on a clean pair of socks. Only a couple of days, more days to go, and it should be fairly dry walking, hopefully. But for the people who are wondering what it's like, well, the water temperature when you're crossing the river is enough to take your breath away. If you were swimming in it, it would definitely take your breath away. And you certainly feel it for a few minutes while you're walking. Because the shoes aren't waterproof, they pump out a lot of the excess water, and as your feet are obviously working all the time, they're generating quite a lot of heat. Now, in all honesty, I can't say right now my feet are warm, but they are a cool body temperature. But the inconvenience of using boots and then changing continually on conditions like this, it's well worth a little bit of cold feet. There's no damage to the feet. I'm not spending all day in water. Just, I don't care if they get wet. Feet are, of course, waterproof. There's about another couple of kilometres, as I understand it, to get down to the footbridge, and then we're virtually at the end of Loch Ossian, and then we've just got the length of the Ossian to walk. There is a youth hostel at the end, which we've been discussing may or may not be open, but if it's open, we'll definitely see if we can get a cup of tea, something to warm ourselves with. As we're feeling quite chilled walking in these conditions. I've got two layers on, the merino base layer and my merino waistcoat, which is perfect for me. Then of course the waterproofs, and I'm cool. I could work faster and still be the right temperature. We just stopped, as I say, for a break. Tony's feeling a bit disheartened. It's his turn today to feel a bit down. And he just can't quite get the energy to keep the pace up. Lee, as always, is forging ahead. And I'm just basically following in his footsteps. As best I can, apart from the ones where I almost break my leg. So, hope this has come out clear enough. had to wrap the recorder up in all kinds of protection to protect it from the wind and the rain. So hopefully you'll get the gist of what I've been saying. Good morning. It's almost 9 o'clock and we're on the road again. Well, last night we had the fortune to get to the end of Loch Ossian and to the youth hostel that's there, and we were three sodden, soaked, drowned rats, and the weather wasn't letting up, and it was that persistent rain that doesn't seem to be heavy at first glance but somehow works through every orifice God knows, and even the ones God doesn't. So we arrived there. Actually, I've got no idea what time it was. Could have been four-ish, I guess. To be greeted by a couple of volunteers, Alex and Gordon, who were most warm and welcoming. And the warden was the lovely Val, who was charming. Very gentle, very affable, and more than happy to put us up for the night. We were intending is the right word? I don't know, in that weather. We were thinking of camping not far out from the station. There's a camping spot which Lee and Tony know as being the best one in the area, because it's very boggy around here. And we ummed and we erred and we chopped and we changed, and Alex was actually very knowledgeable about the tracks in the area and how bad they might be, and the warmth of the fire, and by the second cup of tea it was sold. We were in for the night, and what a great move that was. We emptied out our packs and just realised just how wet things have become, so hung them up on the drying rack and ensued a lovely evening's conversation and banter about outdoor stuff generally and everybody's trips. A couple of the guys came in, a chap that we bumped into actually, who was doing lots of Monroe bagging. We saw him at Ben Elder Cottage as we left the other morning, and he also was booked in and appreciated a dry night. And then a cyclist, who would you believe it, had cycled in from Dundee. Unbelievable. About 150 miles. Good grief. What a fit character he was. But equally a drowned rat. Apart from wearing this Gore-Tex shake jacket, which you shake dry, which looked phenomenal. His top half was dry, even though he'd obviously been exerting himself and cycling through the same weather we'd been walking in. The bottom half was soaked, but the jacket is something worth exploring. I've not heard of this Gore-Tex shake, so I'll need to check that out. So, very pleasant evening. Got to bed early-ish, I guess. We got ourselves together about 6 o'clock, dragged all our various bags into the kitchen and made breakfast while we were chatting to Alex and Gordon. Alex had a top-of-the-range DJI drone, the new Mavic Pro 2, and he was showing some of the pictures that he got with the camera with the Hasselblad lens on his phone around the area. My goodness me, they were beautiful. Really beautiful. And with a range of 5 miles, he's flown from the youth hostel all around the area and got some magnificent images. So crisp, they almost look like a map. The lines of the tracks superimposed on the ground. Another one for my Christmas list, I think. So, after our farewells, as you can hear, we hit the track, and after discussions last night, we've changed the route, and rather than go into Fort William along what will be a very boggy, wet, depressing route from what everybody was saying, we decided to head north to Hoogspeen Bridge instead and camp up close to Speen Bridge, maybe enjoy the cafe there while we wait for the bus in the morning, or the train if it's running to Fort William, and then our journey's end. So we're just looking for this spot which has been described as being the only camping spot in the area, which is north of Karor Station, by a bridge apparently. And once we found that, we'll continue on our way. Hopefully, I think it's a Land Rover track, a hardcore track, pretty well most of the way to Speen Bridge. So if there's anything else interesting happening, I shall come back a bit later on. Three o'clock, and we left the small little body on the walk to Speen Bridge about, I don't know, half an hour or so ago, I guess. Thankfully, it's a decent Land Rover track now. The bit before the body, from the beautiful abandoned white house that was on Loch Trigg. Honestly, what a location. You'd think it was a superb holiday cottage spot. The views and the location were just magnificent. And as Tony and Lee were saying, it's a great spot for camping when you're doing the TGO, if you're ever going onto that junction where it turns, it turned left for Fort William or straight on for Speen Bridge. But anyway, that's by the way. The weather today has been the best of the week. Spitting, but not all through the day, and the cold wind has died down to an acceptable chilly breeze. And so we're pottering down towards, as I say, Speen Bridge. I can see the trees, actually. There's a couple of forests or small forests, copses. How does a copse become a forest? Anyway, I don't know. And I can see them ahead of me now. In fact, Lee and Tony are waiting for me on the bridge as it crosses over the stream. So we're going to look for a camping spot now, or when I catch up with them, and then it gives us around 4k in the morning to walk down into Speen Bridge, walk down the road a bit, get over the bridge, and either catch the train or find the bus or whatever. And I suppose that's pretty well the end of our journey. It's been a challenging week, to say the least, really, with all the different disasters that have happened with the weather, the intensity of the weather, the damage to tents, mine in particular, the way everything gets absolutely soaked through, and trying to keep the old spirit up when everything around you feels sodden. It's not just sodden, it's cold and sodden, and then the wind comes along and makes you feel even worse. That's the tricky bit. And yesterday it was a good decision to stop at the youth hostel on Loch Ossian, and it was a pure coincidence and to our benefit
that the trains weren't running to Kurua Station. Apparently they're doing some work on the line for a couple of weeks, because normally the youth hostel is full. Apparently people make a jaunt of it. They come out to Kurua Station. There's a lovely restaurant apparently on the station. They have a nice meal there. They either stay in the hotel at the station or walk the 20 minutes down to the hostel, stay at the hostel, walk back in the morning, have breakfast, and then catch the train back to whence they came. What a lovely romantic thing to do. What a lovely idea that is. So it was to our benefit and that the train wasn't running, and we had the bunks to ourselves, apart from the other couple of stragglers that came in. And as I say, Gordon and Alec and Val, the hostess, the hostel manager, I suppose, were most welcoming, very warm, very nice people. So a good evening of chat and explanations. Alex was very knowledgeable as a lot of the paths around, and we took his advice really that this would be the better way out rather than going to Fort William, and we're so glad we did. Apart from the first boggy bit, which was to be expected. Oh, and actually, if you're a TGOer, that section after the White House coming this way, or vice versa if you're doing the TGO, there's a couple of lovely camping spots just along the air, so that's nice. Where was I? Anyway, so yes, we're getting close to the end, basically. The last night tonight, whatever we can find, hopefully dry things out. I found out my roll-top waterproof bags, which must be, like everything else in my rucksack, at least 5 to 10 years old, have actually lost their waterproofness. I'm a little concerned that my sleeping quilt is wet, but if it stays dry enough tonight, then hopefully I can air it and dry that out as much as I need to. As I said at the beginning of this trip, everything I'm carrying is vintage. Yeah, it's vintage, I suppose. Vintage, big, borrowed, second-hand, old gear. The only new gear that I've got is a £10 pair of walking trousers from a Lidl, which I bought last year, and have proved them to be perfectly adequate for the job, and a Lidl head torch, which is a USB chargeable, rechargeable head torch with an automatic light setting on it and four different settings and a red light and flashing and all sorts of things. And again, that was £10. Somebody mentioned, I think, on a forum that they thought it was a copy of one of the Petzolds. Possibly. Very close to it. It was not a direct copy. And this is the state of the play at the moment. You can actually go hiking, going lightweight if you wish to do so, without spending an absolute fortune, and buying stuff second-hand. The Jam rucksack of music, that's second-hand. Got that off eBay. The quilt is an old quilt of mine. I've had that for, I don't know, 10, 12 years. I think I've gone through everything on my list. But what I will do is, when I get back and edit this and check it all, add a little bit of extra information if I've missed any of the obvious stuff that I think might be useful to you. So I don't know if anything more will be added this evening or even tomorrow. I do know the guys are very keen to get to Fort William, get to the hotel, dump the stuff, have a bath, and get to the pub. And after that, there's no chance of any intelligent conversation coming out of them. So if I can get them to add anything, I will do. I was hoping to have a lot more interaction with both Tony and Lee all the way through this, but as you gathered from the weather, it was impossible. Normally we sit round the tent, as it were, in the evening over a hot chocolate or something and chew the fat over various items or things that happened during the day. But sadly, that didn't allow us. And that 24 hours being tent bound, stuck in the tent, really was difficult to do anything. So I hope you understand what's transpired and how it's all come together. Anyway, they're patiently waiting for me at the bridge, which is nice of them, before we go hunting for a spot. So, with that in mind, I may catch you a bit later on.
9 p.m. Thursday evening, and our final evening in a field just outside of Speen Bridge. And it seems only natural that the soundtrack should be the soundtrack that's lasted fairly continually through the whole week. Just check the weather forecast, as I've now managed to get a signal, as we're close to civilization, so my 4G is working. And it tells me quite categorically on various websites that the rain is in continually now till 8 a.m. tomorrow morning. By which time hopefully we'll pack and get down to Speen Bridge and then catch a bus, a train or whatever to Fort William, where we have some accommodation sorted before we head back to our various homes on Saturday. As I said, it's earlier on today. It's a shame, really. It's just taken away all opportunities to talk to Tony and Lee about various angles and subjects related to wild camping and hiking in Scotland and second-hand gear and how gear lasts, etc., etc. All the things I wanted to touch on before we came away. And it's been quite frustrating, as you can imagine, being stuck in a tent and pouring rain for hours on end and not being able to hold a conversation. But maybe it's fitting that this piece of atmospheric nature's music should be the soundtrack to the week and bring us to a close. I don't think there's any more to add, really. But if there is, I'll add it after this piece with the big grown-up voiceover. And on that note, I shall leave you to listen to this beautiful tune played once again by the Angels of the Heavens.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To hear or see more from our extensive free library, please visit theoutdoorsstation.co.uk.